Chapter.
Hey, how are you?
And James Kachuler from the Hoosier Chapter.
There you go.
Hi, Amy Peach from Central Ohio.
And MJ Clark from Central Ohio.
Kathy Beard from Central Ohio.
Midwest is well represented.
And Emily Lauer from Greater Cleveland.
Duke Gonzalez from the Hawaii Chapter.
Jim Haynes from the PRSA Board.
Valerie Eagle from the Triangle Chapter.
Bruce Batten from Alaska Chapter.
John Boyle from Central Pennsylvania.
You got Philip Tate from the National Board.
Julie Dick from Houston.
Nancy Sidzik, Las Vegas Valley Chapter.
Agnulo, Denver, Colorado Chapter.
Andrew Corner, Central Michigan Chapter.
Betsy Hayes, Central California Chapter.
Jeff Waldman from the St. Louis Chapter.
Hi, Deb Silverman, National Board.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Mike, it's Dave.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
I'll tell you, a lot of chapters I hear I've either been to or will be going to. So hello to all the places I've been, and I know I've heard a couple that I'll be at the next couple weeks.
Hi, this is Meredith Blaylock from the North Carolina Chapter.
Hello.
Hi, this is Charmin Hill from the South Carolina Chapter.
Hi, this is Julie Bradford from the Salt Lake Chapter.
Hello, Diane Kreider from the chapter in Michigan, White Pines.
Very good.
Debbie Anglin.
Go ahead.
Debbie Anglin from the Oklahoma City Chapter.
Hi, Pat McSwinney from North Florida.
Lori Gatton from Las Vegas Valley Chapter.
Bonnie Upright, North Florida Chapter.
Uh-oh, trouble's here.
Who said that?
Mike Charrington.
I also was on the morning call. I was very quiet.
Oh, okay.
You guys have heard enough from me.
Bonnie, this is Dave. You were not on the call.
I totally was. I joined about 5 minutes late.
All right.
Hi, Bonnie. It's Jeff Dearlin.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Hi, this is Carl Gentles, Phoenix, Arizona.
Thank you.
This is Lee McGivern from Central Iowa.
This is Scott Trotter from Salt Lake City.
Todd Cooley, Orange County and the Western District.
Hi, it's Carl Gentles. How are you? Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Hey, yeah, I'm too, Carl.
Okay.
Was it your assemblyman from Orange County who's in a little bit of trouble right now?
He's not in trouble. He just resigned.
Okay.
I guess his marriage may be in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested to see what happens to the lobbyists who have been identified as his paramours. Hey, it's California. It's typical stuff. Come on.
Hey, I'm from New Jersey. Believe me.
Okay.
Okay, I want to be respectful of everybody's time. We have a lot to discuss. So, first of all, thank you for all joining us today. I appreciate you taking time away from your work and your families and all that you do, and we certainly appreciate that everything you do for PRSA. This is our second Assembly Delegates call. Just want to remind everybody to put yourself on mute or to unmute it, *6*. And again, please don't put us on any of your hold buttons because we often hear the Muzak or whatever kind of, you know, tone we hear. We had a little bit of that this morning. So please put us on mute, *6*, to unmute when you have questions, *6*. I should note we are recording this call, and by participating, you're giving us consent to record this call, and we'll be sending you playback information after the call. If you could, please confirm that you're on the call just so we know, keep attendance and make sure that we communicate with all the chapter sections and districts by sending your information, who you are and what you know, who you represent, sending an email to governance@prsa.org. Again, just send a quick email with who you are and who you represent on governance@prsa.org. And needless to say, this assembly will carry significant weight for PRSA's future. These are some important issues we're discussing. And the main purpose of today's call is to discuss two critical governance issues reflected in the bylaw revision. One is membership classes, and two is board requirements. And we'll have a Q&A, and actually we changed it slightly. We'll do a Q&A following each. Dave will present each issue, and then we'll do a little question and answer following each issue, just so we can more conversational style. Delegates will receive a link to a very quick survey concerning the critical issues being discussed on today's call. So please let us know what you're thinking about after we send the link out. Just some housekeeping issues before we get started. There will be three additional calls, next two dedicated to discussing major governance issues, and the last call will review procedures, amendments, and last-minute questions, and the parliamentarian will be on our last call. Delegates are urged to participate in the calls since they obviously deal with each one deals with different issues. The conference calls are open to delegates and PRSA leaders and will be held at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the following dates. October 1st, we'll address the popular vote versus delegate vote and the role of the assembly. Again, October 1st at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Then October 15th at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m., we'll be looking at the nominating process, term limits, and other related issues. And then on October 22nd, we'll be looking at the process, logistics, and some final questions, again, at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m., all Eastern time. Just to make sure you all have the date, the assembly is on Saturday, November 7th, in San Diego, and most of the day will be dedicated to the bylaw revisions. A delegate briefing will be held on Friday, November 6th, at 6 p.m. All delegates are urged to attend, so please make your travel plans accordingly. If you're attending the assembly and the PRSA International Conference in San Diego, please register by as early as possible, but if you register by September 25th, you'll save $200, and the rates have been cut for additional savings. So package one, and we urge you all to go to the International Conference, it's certainly a great session. Package one, member saver rate is $995. And if you have any questions about travel or hotel accommodations, you can send an email or questions to governance@prsa.org. or chapters@prsa.org, and they'll be glad to help you out with any of those to direct you to the appropriate
totally on
resource.
Mute, so if you want to interrupt me.
Okay.
Some quick links to some resources. Assembly documents, including key dates, FAQs, and delegate handbooks, have been posted on prsa.org and in the governance e-group. Additional documents will be posted as they become available. And to get materials into your hands, the delegates' hands, as quickly as possible while controlling costs and being sustainable and good stewards of the environment, we will not be mailing hard copy materials and binders to delegates this year. We ask that you take the responsibility for downloading and reading the materials posted online, and please bring a hard copy document or a laptop with access to the material. And if you bring a laptop, please make sure your battery is well charged. Providing power to several hundred people may be a challenge. So if you bring your laptop, and certainly something you can do, just make sure you're all powered up and ready to go.
Isn't that what these bylaws are supposed to do, is provide power to the people?
Exactly. There you go. I like that. We'll have to talk to the folks in San Diego first if they can do that. PRSA has developed a bylaws resource page, and it's Christina, it's under About You Bylaws. If you go to prsa.org, or it's
yeah, Mike, it's under About Us.
About Us, sorry.
Right on the home page, and then you'll have a drop-down for bylaws, and everything you need is there.
Okay, and additional resources are being developed and will be added to this page. And we've also set up the governance e-group, which is basically a forum in the MemberNet section of the PRSA website. And if you're not sure if you're part of that or logged on or how to get there, just send an email to governance@prsa.org, and they will direct you. So if you should be on the governance e-group, and if you're not or you're not sure if you are, just send an email to governance@prsa.org, and they'll make sure they get you on. Amendments. With the bylaw revision, amendments to the draft are considered on the assembly floor, so you can present them on the assembly floor. Any credentialed delegate can propose an amendment. But to ensure that we make the best use of our time at the assembly, you are urged and asked to submit any planned amendments to governance@prsa.org no later than Thursday, October 8, 2009. And you don't need to craft the actual language. The intent is fine. PRSA, what our goal is to coordinate the amendments on related issues and to work with our parliamentarian to put them in the proper form for consideration. So if you want to propose an amendment about a particular topic, just send it to the governance of PRSA.org. We'll try to group people with common issues, concerns, and then our parliamentarian will work collaboratively with everybody so we can have as much done in advance of the assembly as possible. Amendments will be shared with the delegates following October 8th early submission deadline. During the assembly, delegates will debate sections of the revised document and make amendments proposing alternative language that can be adopted by a majority vote. In the end, there will be a vote on the entire document with passage requiring a two-thirds vote. And we went over this on the first call. If there's any questions about the process or procedure, we'll certainly do it in the last call. We'll do it at the delegate. Certainly take some questions at the end of this session if you have any questions about how it'll work. Or you can just pop an email at governance@prsa.org and we can provide you that information as well. Proxies. We strongly encourage all delegates to attend the assembly in person. It's obviously an important issues will be discussed and debated, so we urge you all to attend, but realize that it's not always feasible. So delegates who cannot attend the assembly can make their voices heard by proxy on special forums that are being developed. And proxy forums will be available and posted on MemberNet the week of October 12th. And we have to wait for some key deadlines to pass in order to make create the proxy form, so that's why we have to wait till that October 12th. If you have any further questions regarding the bylaw revisions, again, I've given it out. It's governance@prsa.org. And for questions about the assembly or your delegates roster or any of those kind of issues, it's chapters@prsa.org. Again, our goal here today is to discuss and review two issues and to lead that discussion, the critical issues, to lead that discussion, let me introduce Dave Rickey, who's chair of the Bylaws Rewrite Task Force, a former board member and a senior vice president of communications for the Birmingham Business Alliance. So with that, Mr. Rickey, you want to take it away?
Thanks, Mike, and good afternoon, good morning, I guess wherever you may be. I think maybe even Mary Barber's in close to the afternoon. Maybe not yet. Anyhow, appreciate you all being here. What's that?
Good afternoon here.
Well, good. Okay. So I guess it's Honolulu still in the morning. I'm going to make this really brief because I really want to leave as much time as we can for discussion and interaction. For many of you, you've been following this process, you know, hope to goodness not as long as we've been working on it, but at least over the last certainly months and in an intensive way, but it's really a process that has spanned the past couple of years. I don't want to go through the whole process, but just in case there are some people that this may be their first exposure to it, I think just a very, very, very quick review would be in order. Again, this has been a process underway for about 2 years, a very small self-appointed, if you will. We asked anybody at the assembly 2 years ago that wanted to work on the bylaws task force to let us know, and we had 10, 11 people that all were kind of nutty like we are about governance and bylaws. And it was a very, very good group, a small enough group to get things done, yet large enough to be diverse in terms of our practice areas, our geography, et cetera. So this group has, you know, we spent a lot of time doing both primary and secondary research on the issues, what started as a process to basically remove the contradictory language to make the bylaws more contemporary, really turned into what we saw as an opportunity to look at the overall governance structure of PRSA and recommend some changes that might move us forward to allow us to grow even bigger and better. And again, over the course of 2 years, just a lot of time and effort went into a draft that was given to the actually draft issues, if you will, critical issues that the board began deliberating on this past January, spent most of the year so far very focused on the bylaws. At the July meeting, the board did adopt a draft document that incorporated all of the changes that had been recommended and discussed up to that point. And that's an important distinction. That what this document that's out on the Internet now, that's before you all and will be before the Assembly in San Diego is the overall document incorporating all the recommendations to date. Now, we know that in our organization, we don't just put that out there and everybody say, hey, that's wonderful. But at some point we had to say, okay, put the stake in the ground. This is where we are. This is what we think represents the best opportunities to improve the governance of PRSA. We know there will be suggested changes, recommended changes, amendments offered. But as we go through the process today, understand if it sounds like we're being defensive, what we are really doing is explaining the rationale that went into the document as it appears right now. I'm going to probably skip some of the reasons on why even doing a rewrite. I think I've already explained that. But basically, the bylaws are what govern us, not what makes us tick every day, but what really defines who we are, what we are, and how we are going to be governed. So as Mike said, we're going to take three issues today. Two of them are semi-related. We'll get to that in a minute. But I want to talk about the first issue and then have time for discussion, and then we'll try to police that where we may have to say, well, let's move on to the next two items, and then time permitting at the end come back. And I think last time most of us stayed on an extra 10 or 15 minutes. I think most of us are going to be in a position to do that if we need to be, but the goal is to try to get this wrapped up within the hour, just based on your expectations. So the first issue that we're going to deal with is membership classifications, or basically, what defines who can be a member of this organization. In our research, we had some great guidance and counsel from a group called Tecker and Associates, who that's what they do all the time. They talk to organizations just like ours and say, here's where we think your governance can be improved upon. One of the things that they really taught us, one of the things that they explained to us, it was kind of an aha moment, is that as organizations form in their infancy, they are by nature exclusive. They really want to keep the group very tight as far as who can be a member, so you start gaining some critical mass. As an organization matures, it naturally would become more inclusive. More inclusive as far as how broad you define who can be a member. And that's really where the task force and the board feels that PRSA is right now, is at a more mature point that we could kind of, we've called it broadening the tent, whatever you want to call it. But even more important than that is an element, and that was actually directionally what the task force was recommending. But what really has happened is that our profession has grown so dramatically, and it has grown horizontally in terms of, what is considered to be public relations. If you're a blogger based on old definitions, you would not be a public relations professional. I think a lot of us have people that work for us, and I think we would argue very clearly that those people are actually conducting public relations campaigns and activities on a day-to-day basis. So because of that, the additional breadth of who really is practicing public relations, we tried to make the membership classification, which is a very major element of any bylaws, a little bit broader. So if you look at the document, you will see that it basically says it's open to any individual engaged in the professional practice of public relations or communications who promotes the purposes of the society. That kind of feeds off of earlier in the document where there is the preamble, and that's, to some people it's boilerplate, but again, that defines who we are. And our preamble basically is a fact statement that came out of our strategic plan that just, again, defines who we are, that we are, a diverse community, empowered to excel, et cetera, et cetera. So I certainly, if you have not had a chance to look at those two key elements of the bylaws, I would go back and look at that, because that is what really defines us. So what we are saying is, with this recommendation and with this new bylaw, is that membership is open to individuals engaged in the professional practice of public relations or communications. And kind of the proof of that pudding, if you will, whether someone therefore qualifies, is actually handled in the application process. It does not have to be, nor our council told us really should be, dictated by the bylaws. Bylaws just say here is the broad category, but the application process, which many of you have not done that for many years, but you are basically saying that you spend more than 50% of your time in public relations, the professional practice of public relations, that you've agreed to abide by the PRSA Code of Ethics, which is a very important aspect of that, And then that process goes through. So that's really where, you know, there are some concerns that the tent's too wide, that too many people can actually get in based on this definition. I'll just tell you that the application process does not change just because this bylaw would change. So that's, I think it's an important element to understand, you know, kind of what is and what isn't. That is the nuts and bolts of the recommendation, the rationale behind it, and the outcome that we are hoping to achieve. So with that, Mike, I think we'll open it up for a conversation.
Okay, and just to clarify a couple points. One, I think obviously as Dave kind of read that statement, this is still, we're still advocating obviously that this be a professional association, and we're not advocating it become a trade association. It still has to be professionals, and that people would obviously have to abide by our code of ethics, which is something that binds us all, and it creates our sense of community, if you will. And we still will have the classes of membership will remain the same. The associate member for our those in the profession for less than 2 years, and again, that was created to help our PRSSA students transition into PRSA, and also then our full membership. And there was also a question earlier about our retired members, and they still will have. This is not an attempt to obviously boost their membership, their dues, or anything of that nature. This is, we feel that's best. That section is best suited for our policies and procedures. And so really, we're making this language as clean and simple as possible. And on this morning's call, for those who weren't able to attend, there was, a few questions about some other professional associations that have very, very clearly and narrowly defined. And the example used were medical, the AMA and some other licensed professions. And as everyone knows, we are not a licensed profession. So many people can call themselves public relations professionals. So with that, maybe we'll open up to some questions or comments people have about this particular topic.
And please identify, if you would, who you are and which chapter, section, or district that you represent, or which part of the organization you represent.
This is Mary Schmidt-Krebs. I'm in the San Diego County Chapter and the Western District Treasurer. Wanted to know, I think Jack O'Dwyer sent out some email to the presidents of different chapters, and he sent one to our San Diego County Chapter. And I believe in it, it stated something like that we might be toying with the idea of accepting advertising people into our organization. Is that the case or not?
I'll tell you what, I'll start and you probably finish. I'm not going to refer to anything that you might have read in other media like that, but I can tell you that the job that I left, probably 40% of my job was advertising. My title was Vice President of Public Relations, but I handled all the advertising. So in a sense, I was already an advertiser in the organization. It is not a direct attempt and a direct methodology to suddenly become the PR/Advertising Association of America or Society of America. But the lines have become so blurred for all of us. My title right now is Senior Vice President of Communications, which is so broad that it could include a lot of things. But I spend easily more than half of my time in public relations on a day-to-day basis. So the task force tried to actually sit down and write job titles. That these are the kind of people that could be in public, kind of titles that can be in Public Relations Society of America. And obviously that would have added 20 more pages to the bylaws because it is just so wide. And again, I think that's a good thing, the fact that our organization is broader than it ever has been. But we still are the Public Relations Society of America. There's no attempt, no directive, no idea to try to make it more than that. But to ensure that a lot of our professionals who may be, again, on the social media front, that may not be what we all consider to be classical public relations, we think that they ought to be able to be part of our organization. They have a lot to bring to the table, and we have a lot to bring them in. So that is the intent, regardless of what you may have read otherwise.
And again, I think the code of ethics is something that all members have to, sign a code of ethics. And And obviously, even those who purchase space would have to disclose that purchase and any financial considerations. So, I mean, I think the lines are blurring, as Dave said, between so many different functions and, you know, the online. And I could just tell you, I was at a chapter visit, I think it was in the Akron chapter, actually, and somebody came up to me and said that they work in public information for a municipality, and they weren't certain if PRSA was for them. They didn't think that, you know, but based upon the description and the title, whether this was an organization for them to join. And then I had another person come up to me who was in a traditional public relations role, has now moved to the social media role, and asked me, should I still be a member of PRSA? And I would argue both the public information officer at a municipality or any government agency or a person who's moved into social media should feel comfortable joining and being part of our community. And because they are, you know, and as long as they, I think, adhere to our code of ethics and committed to the same core principles we are, I think, you know, my feeling is personally that they should be welcome. And I think we're still a professional organization. We're still the Public Relations Society of America. And so, but the lines have blurred, so.
This is Barbara Wellnitz from the Boston chapter. I can tell you that we have been struggling with this particular item. And I certainly can understand why someone who has a title VP of Communications, Public Information Officer, Social Media Director, et cetera, might certainly come under this umbrella. I do have a question, and certainly there are several of us in the Boston chapter who do, and that is, would someone with a title such as Director of Advertising or someone who was on, who worked in an advertising agency qualify for membership in PRSA?
That will depend. I'm sorry, Mike.
Go ahead, Deb. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that will be dictated by the application process when the person actually writes down honestly what, you know, how much of their time they spend on public relations. If the person spends more than 50% of their time on public relations, they probably have the wrong title. But again, that's why we have the process that we do have. And listen, we have to trust people. And, you know, we don't go back and check, and we don't go back and, you know, try to measure the hours and see if we're 50%. I think that would be kind of ludicrous to spend that kind of time, that kind of staff time. But there could be a public relations person at an ad agency that certainly would qualify if that person spends the significant amount of the time or the majority of the time on public relations activities.
I guess I didn't make myself clear. My question wasn't whether someone who's on the PR side of an ad agency, and I was in that role for 3 years some time back, but whether someone on the ad side, say an account manager on the ad side, would qualify.
Dave, this is Jeff. If I might add to this, I think it depends on how a person is defining public relations. If we're defining it by the tactics, that's one thing. If we're defining public relations as that big umbrella, as I always say, of relationship building and management, and part of what you bring to the table is an advertising expertise, as in Dave's example, why wouldn't you be welcomed into PRSA? Because advertising is a powerful public relations tool, and if your expertise is doing corporate positioning, public policy types of things, but the main area that you're focused on is creating the ads, I don't know why we wouldn't want people like that to be part of us so that we grow the understanding, again, of the discipline of building relationships for organizations.
I think, and I won't belabor this, so this is the last point I'm going to make. I think that you have just exactly expressed my concern, and that is, in my experience, and you know, obviously I'm talking for myself, I certainly found that folks on the ad side thought everything was advertising and very little of it was left to PR. And I would really hate to see this definition become more the norm. And therefore, I'm a bit concerned about the big tent in this particular category. So
that's all
I'm going to say.
This is just how I processed it and whether this is true or not, but this is Mike again. it came down to me was I more concerned about what, quote-unquote, they would do to us or how we could positively impact them? And I use us and them. How are these others that the advertising folks, bloggers, was I more concerned if they joined our community, what they how they would negatively impact PRSA, or was I thinking about how PRSA could positively impact them and the entire communication space? And for me, it came down to how we can positively impact them and how we can change the communication environment. If we can make them part of us, we can make them better. And I use them and us, but this is just how I processed it. And what I'm hearing, and I've been throughout the country, I've heard a lot of people, is I think a lot of people are just concerned what they may do to us. I think it's the opposite. I see this as an opportunity to improve the entire communication, all the disciplines. I really see this as a huge opportunity for us. So that's just, I mean, that's just my two cents, how I saw it as an individual member.
Yeah, can I blend my two cents here real quick?
Go ahead, Mr. Corbett.
Oh, thank you. Now, let me just say, I've been a member of PRSA for more than 35 years, and I've been on both sides of the fence. And I'm past president of the International Advertising Association, and I'm in Arthur Page and a bunch of other related associations. You know, I just think it makes us a richer society and gives us a much better ability to take the mantle of thought leadership if we understand all this. So while I absolutely appreciate everybody's point, I just want to caution we shouldn't get too overly concerned here, because I think the entire communications business is becoming mashable as hell, and I just think whatever we can learn and give back to our members benefits us all.
And Mike, I would also add, if you have a moment, if this is really a serious concern to people, go back to the existing bylaws. And in fact, some people have said, why do we even need this based on how insignificant the changes actually bear out. If you go back and look at the existing bylaws, it's very much the same language. It's streamlined. It is not a significant difference from what exists now. And maybe there's, you know, too many people coming inside the tent now, but I haven't heard that. I've heard more that this looks like it's going to be opening the tent so wide that almost anybody can come in, when in reality, because of the actual words are not that significantly different, and the fact that we still have the same process to follow for qualification through the application, that it does not expand it to the point that I think some people are fearing.
Well, Dave, what was confusing to me was, and I'm with you 100%, and when you said, yeah, if the guy who works in the ad agency files his application and he does public relations 50% of his time, then, yeah, he'd qualify. But then I heard somebody else saying, but maybe he doesn't do PR. Maybe he is purely an advertising copywriter designer, but advertising is used as a tactic for PR, so he would qualify. So I think if you guys in future, you know, as after the call when you send out more communications on this, if you can be a little clearer, because one thing sounds absolutely fine and as we're doing it now, but the other, that somebody who's an advertising copywriter because advertising is a PR tactic could be qualified for membership even though the person does not do public relations, that's, I think, where then we all confuse ourselves all over again. So maybe we can get a little more clarity on that going forward.
This is Mary Barber. Thanks, Kathy. And what I would suggest that people do, too, is go look at the membership application so that you can see what people need to complete before they can apply. Because I think that will also help to clarify some of this.
And hi, it's Christina. And I encourage this group to also look at the Code of Ethics. Because when you read the Code of Ethics, you'll see that that's really specific to public relations, and an individual will have to sign off on adhering to that code before they can complete the application.
For example, a reporter, for example, might have a difficult time signing our code of ethics because, for example, safeguarding confidences. Well, the reporter, I'm not going to keep your confidence. I'm going to publish what I hear. And so I'm just thinking of one clause. They may not be able to join because they may not be able to agree to our code of ethics. So while they may be communication professionals, that's one group, for example, that because of some of the, that our code is written specifically for public relations professionals, they may be a communication discipline that just won't be able to join. So, if you read through it, I'm a reporter. Could I sign this code of ethics? I don't know. I don't think I could. Not that they're unethical, but they would abide by different code.
You'd only sign a mic if you truly were unethical.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Exactly. Well, that's part of the, I guess, another issue. But so.
This is Catherine Smart from the North Carolina chapter. I've got a question regarding this in terms of, is this an effort, as you talk about being more inclusive as we mature, is this an effort to expand membership for financial purposes, such as being able to group organizations and offer them better deals? Is that any part of the consideration here?
I think that the better answer to that is we've done a lot of research, and there are more than 200,000 people that are categorized as doing public relations or practicing public relations that are not members. I think that's a field that's really ripe for harvest there. So it is, could it bring people in that would not otherwise come in? Perhaps. But it absolutely would be the intent of this initially, as I explained at the outset, was simply to try to provide the appropriate definition for who can be a member, which is one of the major tenets of any bylaws for any organization. It was not a financial directive to try to find ways to get more people in. Bill Murray and the entire staff, they're busting their butts every single day at headquarters trying to find new ways to attract those people that are currently in our profession, new to our profession, trying to bring them into the fold. They've got their hands full with that.
Well, and I agree wholeheartedly. Certainly this is not the organization for, this is not a trade association. We're staying true to our values as a professional association. But let's be honest also, anyone could come to our events. Many of our events are open too, so whether they're a printer or pen salesman, they're free. Certainly if they want to pay the non-member rate, we still have people that participate in our community and participate. We have many quote unquote customers, maybe not members, but customers who may be not members. So we have eliminating these people already taking part. And I should also say that in if you just even look at some of the people that are in leadership roles with PRSA now, traditionally some of the news wires were considered vendors. But now they're part of the strategic communication process. And many of them are chapter presidents and leaders in our organization and traditionally the wires were seen as just a distribution and vendors. But now they're actually integral parts of the whole communication process. So I think that's a good example of how the industry has changed and how people that may have served in a traditional vendor role, and let's face it, most agencies are in a vendor capacity as well, looking for corporate clients and often hawking their wares and trying to secure clients. So if the concern is that people are going to come and sell to you at every meeting and you're going to have people, theoretically it could happen right now. So
I don't want to cut off discussion. If anybody has a burning question or comment, let's go ahead and do that. But I do want to, we've got 20 more minutes, at least within the 1 hour time restraint, and got a couple of the big issues, but again, I don't want to necessarily cut things off.
And we can bring it online too, Dave, so people can certainly continue their discussion on the e-group. So
yeah, and then again, several of us, if we need to, we can stay online, on the line here after the hour's up too. So I guess, Mike, with your permission, I'll go on.
Go ahead, there, Mr. Rickey.
Okay, the board requirements and board composition. There are actually two elements within that. That we want to talk about today. One is the recommendation that we remove the formal geographic criteria. That is that there will be one board member from each of the 10 geographic districts. The task force recommended and the board agreed to remove that as a specific criteria, as an absolute that must be adhered to as we select the people to serve on our board. the nominating committee has very specific directives in their policies and procedures to ensure diversity of the board throughout all elements of diversity, whether it be geography, whether it be race, whether it be practice area, to ensure that PRSA, the board of PRSA, does look as closely as possible to our overall membership. So that is an issue that's come up the last couple of years in the assembly. It did not last year. Year before last, it came up, and actually a majority of the delegates that day voted in favor of a little bit different proposal, but it really accomplished the same thing. But it required a two-thirds majority, so it failed on the floor. But I think that we saw that there was at least a growing understanding of the benefits of not having that as a specific stated in the bylaws criteria to be a member of the board of directors. The other element, and we'll talk about both these kind of interchangeably in a moment, but the other element as far as board requirement was an issue. It also has been discussed in a variety of different forums, a lot of different avenues, and that is the requirement that to be on the board of directors of PRSA, you have to be an APR. Again, we talked about this at length as a task force. The board spent a considerable amount of time debating it, and as you'll see in the bylaws, APR is one of a set of criteria, not again an absolute, but it is clearly recognizing that APR is going to be a major factor for the nominating committee in determining who will make the best leaders. It just simply recognizes the fact that APR alone does not in and of itself mean that person is automatically a leader. So again, it goes into the discussion that the nominating committee will have. I think, you know, it's very, very easy for me to understand, after having been on nominating committee, that if we have two candidates, one of whom, if they're both basically equal, except one's an APR and one is not, that would be an easy decision for me to make, that I would select that one that has the APR. Conversely, if you have two people, neither of whom have APR, you're looking at other criteria to see if that person really is the best leader. As we've said on other calls, APR does not necessarily mean that you are a great leader. It shows that you care about your profession, that you care enough to go through the process to receive that certification, but does not automatically mean that you are a born leader. And there are some that are and some that aren't.
Carl Gentles from Phoenix. Is this for the national board or for our local individual chapters as well?
It is for national board. Local boards still have, just like they do with the title of whether it's chair or president. Local chapters have their own set of bylaws. What we will do is to send a template, but the board can make that determination. But yeah, excuse me. The easy answer to your question is this particular bylaw applies only to the national board.
And again, we're not removing APR. It's just saying there's other criteria to consider as well. So right now, that's the APR, and the first checkoff box for the nominating committee right now is APR and geography. And so I think what we're saying is certainly geography can be considered, and APR is one of the boxes you can check, but so is whether you're a chapter, section, or district leader, or whether you have 20 years experience. So it's just basically creating more leadership opportunities for our members, 80% of which are not APR.
What percentage?
This is Mary with the San Diego chapter again, and we talked about this at our board meeting, and this was with regard to assembly delegates and the APR, and I'm thinking that perhaps it also might apply to this national board criteria of APR. We talked about the idea of having it be a requirement that the assembly delegates be at least 50% of the assembly delegates be APR. So if you have three assembly delegates, at least two of them are APR, and the other one doesn't have to be. Or if you have four, then at least two of them are. And would that be, is there any way that we could insert that into the national board? At least 50% or two-thirds or whatever?
Well, in any portion of what's now out there is that document is certainly open to amendments. And we talked a little bit at the beginning of the call. We had the call with the parliamentarian a couple of weeks ago. What we're asking, if somebody has a suggestion, just like you just suggested, is that as a chapter, and you may want to even look for other chapters that are willing to kind of come in together on that, but you need to send those to Christina Darnowski or to governance@prsa.org. And
that's
and,
exactly what we wanted. We didn't know who to send stuff to.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I'll tell you what, let's go over that at the end. Let's not forget that. But anyone who has any suggestions, I mean, the document will be presented to the delegates at the assembly in its current form. You cannot make changes between what we have now and what will actually be presented and recommended to the whole body. But we know that there are a number of people that have suggested changes, and we're asking people to send those to governance@prsa.org. The parliamentarian is in some cases taking what San Diego chapter may have written, which was very similar to what Rochester might have written, and the parliamentarian will work with both of those chapters and say, okay, is this what you meant, and put it in the right terminology just to make sure that it is indeed what your intent was, and that way the documentation for the amendments will already be in place and then can be offered from the floor at the assembly the day of the meeting.
And again, certainly, you know, as Dave indicated, we're certainly open to those amendments and so forth. But again, remember some of the at least our overarching goals, and all the delegates may come in with some different objectives, but was to create a more streamlined and simpler set of bylaws and make it a more democratic and kind of create more opportunities and empowerment opportunities for our members. So while certainly all those, but you know, the concern, I think some of the concerns we had of overcomplicating it by putting, you know, different percentages in and systems and checks and values, it certainly there are a lot of those in there, but also we wanted to make sure they're the cleanest document. One of the problems we have now is that we have a camel, you know, a horse designed by committee. We're trying to, that's why we all need to work collaboratively in advance and share whatever concepts we have, and maybe we can, you know, try to get a lot of this work done before we get there. Any other questions? Dave, are you done with the...
Yes.
This is Sally Evans in Houston.
Hey, Sally.
I have a concern, and it is a concern that our chapter has expressed since you started on this process, and that is that rather than promoting accreditation, which is a good program and has always had the possibility of really strengthening our profession, rather than promoting accreditation, you are dumbing down to make it just one of potential criteria. And that defeats the purpose of accreditation. I believe if you do this, you will find fewer and fewer of the agency heads and the senior people becoming accredited if they don't have to in order to participate at these levels.
You know, somebody said on this morning's call, because that was brought up earlier, that if the only reason people are taking the APR so they could be on the national board, we're in trouble. I mean, you know, I think that there might be bigger problems for APR. I mean, I think most people take it for their own personal for the value it provides to them personally in their careers to advance professionally. And I don't know how many are really, and I don't have the data on this, but my hunch is most of them are not taking it so they can be on the national board, because very few people are on the national board and even apply for the national board. So, I mean, while I understand what you're saying, and also the test was never designed and does not test for leadership ability, understanding of PRSA, understanding of how PRSA works, or nonprofit laws, or anything of that effect. So we're using a test about PR as a criteria for whether you can lead a major nonprofit corporation. So we're kind of mixing apples and oranges, you know. I mean, so it's somewhat...
I think the issue, though... It's Doug from
Tri-State.
Sorry, who's this? It's Doug Seneschal from Tri-State District.
Okay.
I think that the problem is, and I'm kind of ambivalent on this issue, but the problem is that what happens right now is that you're coming up, you know, okay, you get active in your chapter, maybe you don't have to be an APR, but you look up and you see that the leadership, the people you come to respect and admire are all APR. For whatever reason, they're all APR. And so
that becomes something that you want to aspire to, because you want to aspire, you know, you aspire to be like those other people. And maybe bringing, you know, leadership to the organization is part of it. I also don't see APR as a governance issue. I see that as an issue of ethics. I see that as an issue of personal quality. But I'm really, I was involved with the decision to make it unnecessary to be an APR to be a delegate. And I've seen a lot of real quality people who are not APR come now to conference. But I look at those people and I'm, first of all, I'm saying, why aren't you APR? And then the second thing I'm saying is, if we follow this through, I'm concerned that, you know, one of the reasons you take APR is because something that the other people you aspire to. I'm beginning to circle around here in my reasoning, but my point is that if more and more people are involved in the governance of this organization are not APR, and you said before 80% of our members are not APR, if more and more of our members are not APR, then that takes away a reason, one reason to become an APR. And if that's not solidly reasoned out, it's because I haven't solidly reasoned out my feelings on this yet. That's the source of my concern. I don't know if it makes any sense. There you go.
No, and I, you know, it's, you make some good points, Doug. And I think, you know, one of the other issues we made this morning is that the nominating committee, your representative. So, for example, Doug is representing the Tri-State District on the nominating committee. Doug, when those candidates come before Doug, he certainly can ask, why are you not APR? And if you're not APR, you may not get my vote. I mean, it's really your representatives on the nominating committee can certainly use APR as a criteria. But if you have a great candidate who doesn't have APR but has been a 20-year pro, has been on every chapter committee, and this person is just awesome and great, and we need that kind of person in leadership, right now we're saying no, because you don't have your APR. What we're saying is empower the nominating committee to say, yes, we need people like you. And so,
yeah, but take that to the extreme, Mike, and you know, you've got people sitting on the nominating committee now that no longer are APR, unless you keep that as a requirement for NomCom, and I guarantee if you do, we'll be having this discussion about NomCom next. And so where does it go? Where, you know, I guess, you know, Rick, Ricky, one of my questions would be, what do other organizations with accreditation programs do? Do they not require it as part of governance? Or, you know, and I know I'm now mixing two significant issues that the organization is dealing with, but I'm not sure they're, you can separate them, and I understand logically what you're saying. I understand we want, make the bigger tent, have these quality people, and I'm thinking of some specific folks. But I'm kind of squirmy about the value of APR if our leadership no longer has it. And I'm going to shut up because I haven't reached my own conclusion yet, but that's where I am with it.
And, Doug, you asked a good question, and part of the process that we did, and you know, this is one of those things, just because somebody else either does or doesn't do something doesn't make it right or wrong for our organization. But we did do a lot of secondary research on a number of organizations, some very much like ours, some very much unlike ours. And as I'm looking across the spreadsheet that we used to kind of lay out what we thought were best practices, what we thought were similar organizations, very, very, very few have a requirement of certification as a requirement for leadership. In fact, I'm now on page 4 and I haven't found one. But most of them, I don't see one as I just went across. I know there were some. I'm not trying to say it was absent. But again, okay. So why did we do that? Why did we go through that exercise? Because we had not significantly looked at our governance structure. So we looked at other organizations that have adopted more streamlined governance structure, and that was one that kind of flew up not in our face, but. The fact that there was not a certification required, even SHRM, Society for Human Resources Management. I mean, they have certain professional characteristics that they have to have, but most of them do not have any special requirements for board membership, and that is a very clear trend that we found across the board through all of our research.
Well,
Well, Dave, this is Kathy Luton. The other way to look at it is to literally flip it, too, and say, you know, we're saying you have to be APR to be on our board, and that's our club, that we're going to club you into doing it. And three-quarters of our membership, including a lot of industry leaders, a lot of very senior people, a lot of agency CEOs, a lot of senior corporate communications VPs, if you look at the, you know, the list of PR Week's list, for instance, have said, okay, then we'll opt out on both. If I have to do APR to get to be part of national leadership, then you'll lose me on both ends. So we are denying ourselves access to some people who could be incredibly, not only good leaders, but bring with them outreach to and presence with sections of the corporate communications community, the agency community that we now don't have a lot of presence in, that we used to, but we don't now, because that's their club back. It's sort of, okay, I'll say no to both.
And, you know, you bring a good point about flipping it. We're all looking at it from the perspective of people that are active in this association, and many of the people on this call have their APR and value it, but look at the perspective of the 80% who aren't, and what does it say to them, that you can't be, you know, we want your dues, but you can't be on the national board. You know, it's also sending a message to them, which I don't know is very democratic, if you will. As I said, it's been easier to become president of the United States in many ways. The qualifications are, what, two or three? You have to be a certain age, naturally born citizen, and live in this country for 14 years. That's it.
Yeah, but the perks of being PRSA president are much greater than the president of the United States.
Exactly.
Nobody yells at you.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Catherine Smart again.
Yes.
I've got a concern about the geographic requirement, and I'm just concerned that that not having that required regional representation could remove national somewhat from the chapters, and I just wonder how you plan to address that.
That's an excellent question. I think it's being managed now in a number of different ways. In reality, when someone is elected, let's say from the Southeast District where I'm from, you know, the day that person actually becomes a national board member, he or she technically does not represent Southeast District anymore. They represent the entire membership, and a lot of people have heard us say this, but it's a very true realism of being on the board. You can ask anybody that's been on the board that you really don't carry with you on your back the district that brought you there. Now that doesn't mean that you don't interact with them, that you're not an ally to them. You know, clearly that exists in some districts, not every district, but it. If that happens, excuse me, what I was going to say beyond that was the last couple of 3 years, each of the national chairs, and it may have been longer than that, and I just can't remember how many years, I mean, there is a very active board member to chapter, sections, and district communication process that at least once a quarter, if not more, the board members are touching the people that they are assigned kind of to at least keep in touch, not just to represent in a vacuum, but just to keep that line of communication open. Keep in mind also that lines of communication go both ways, and if the district has a particular issue, I mean, they can reach right out directly to Mike Jarrison or the chair, or if they have a good relationship with that person that was elected from that district, that's fine. So I don't think that would automatically then we would have no real connection between the districts and national. What it again is doing is ensuring that is not an absolute that has to be met for someone to actually be on the national board.
Excuse me, this is Sally Evans again. The difficulty with that is that someone who comes from one of the regions is more likely to have a perspective from that region. And as you know, some of us are very concerned about the organization getting too New York-centric.
You know, and I want to argue right now, for example, I don't know if there's anybody on the board who does investor relations, so we've completely lost that focus. And, you know, if we may go years without having certain, you know, health care, and those are two very regulated professions that have probably some very unique public relations skill sets and know-how and requirements from PRSA, and So you know, no, we've said geography, where you live, is more important than what you do, and I'm not sure if that's, you know, is true anymore. And certainly the nominating committee will still be geographically diverse and still have be represented from the district. So I think that's the quote unquote protection, if you will, to make sure there's, or they're there to make to you know, if they want to use geography as a criteria, they certainly can. They're empowered to do that. But if they feel, you know, that they want some diversity of professional diversity or other kind of different perspectives on the public relations profession, they're empowered to do that as well.
So, Mike, this is Mark from the Northeast District just joining the call. This is obviously an issue near and dear to me and a number of other district chairs who have submitted an amendment to three different district chairs already, Northeast, North Pacific, and Mid-Atlantic, to maintain the geographic diversity because it is so essential. Is very important to somewhat important to 74% of our members, which is the fourth highest element there. And the question is, the foundation of our organization are the chapters and the members in those chapters. And there's a risk of sundering that bond when it has worked successfully for decades, and the potential of there being nobody in the West Coast or the East Coast, or even worse to my mind, nobody in the middle of the country, depending on how things end up breaking out. And do I think it's likely to start? No, but there's been no compelling argument yet made why we want to disregard what 75% of the members say is one of the top four issues for them, to open up a risk for there to be this sundering in terms of what's the cost benefit there. And to my mind, and the mind of a number of other district chairs, that criteria hasn't been met. And I think the one thing I encourage folks, because I know time is late, is go online to the governance forum if you haven't yet. There's been some debate about this. There's a resolution, an amendment. There's some pros and cons on both sides that can make some interesting cases, and it's a good way to educate yourself about this issue.
Mark, I had no idea you felt that way.
Yeah, I know, Dave. You guys have never heard me. What can I say?
That's right.
You know, and I might propose an amendment there, barring Red Sox fans from the assembly, just so you know. So no, kidding.
That's okay. I'm a Patriots fan, too. We'll be the Jets.
Okay.
And you know, Mark is from New England, and he really has that civic kind of attitude about, you know, going in and changing things and sometimes not changing things. And I'm asking people to do, certainly study them, see how it affects you, how it affects your place in this organization. But at the same time, don't be afraid to take risk. You know, unnecessary risk, absolutely not. But a risk that might actually open up opportunities that we don't currently have, I just ask everybody to consider that as they're making their decisions and as your chapters and districts or sections are discussing the issues. You know, try to keep a broad view of how things might be a little bit better, and even if it is risky.
And thanks, Dave, but the New Englanders here are good at taking risks. That's why we came over.
and you certainly make some good points, but at the same time, during the existence of PRSA, I've seen, you know, Neary, we've seen the council PR firms and Arthur Page and others, I've heard people say we don't have enough corporate people on the board. We don't have enough of this on the board. And, you know, so I think you could certainly say geographic diversity is important, but I've also heard that we don't have enough corporates, we don't have enough academic, we don't have enough this, we don't have enough that. And I think independence and each one of those communities has their own needs and you know, things they want from PRSA, and I think...
Excuse me, but you're not putting that in the bylaws. You're only taking out the geographic.
Basically what we're saying is the nominating committee, who are your representatives, will empower them to make a determination who they believe. And by the way, and the other thing that we haven't talked about this is eventually let the members decide who they want leading them. And that's part of this whole democratic push. I mean, even though we're breaking this conversation up into small pieces, and we'll have some of this membership at large. If you look at the overall trend of all this, it's creating a more democratic, open, member participation organization where, you know, we don't say no because of the badge you wear in your name and where you live. And we want to say yes to the best people on the board. We want to let our members have more say in the way the governance of this organization. We want to empower the nominating committee, your representatives, to empower them to make the best choices based upon the needs of that organization at that moment in time, empowering all of these institutions to do their job. And, you know, Jeff gave me great advice when I joined the board. Let the board do what the board can do, staff do what the staff can do, and volunteer what the volunteers can do. And I think we need to let the members do you know, be empowered to do what they can do. Let the nominating be empowered to do the things they can do. Let the board be empowered to do the things they empower all of our institutions. Give them more things to do. And certainly there may be, you may be saying we're taking a little away from one, but we're giving them to others more.
Mike, the other thing that was kind of interesting that you all talked about on the earlier call was the concept of, can you have geographic representation without tying it precisely to the existing districts, which are so disproportional, and some are active and some aren't, and that doesn't even actually matter anyway, but some are very, very big, some are very, very small, some have lots of chapters, some don't. Is there not a way to say to the nominating committee, you must ensure geographic balance or representation on the board, but it doesn't necessarily have to end at a state line when you've got one district that has no candidates one year, and in the state, one state next to it, there could be six candidates, but they're across the state line into a different district.
Well, the nominating committee does have specific guidelines to, again, to look at that diversity, not quite as specific as you're talking about. And I think, you know, again, any of these things could happen. This is why we're having the calls now to try to pull out of things. I mean, you know, we think that we've all done a good job of researching and doing our best job of presenting something to the assembly, but we don't think that we've got a monopoly on good ideas. So that's why we're having these discussions now, so that hopefully we can process a lot of these ideas and get some consensus going into San Diego.
Dave, it's Bonnie. I just have one thing I want to throw in. I know we're running short on time, but for those who don't know, North Florida and Sunshine District, and granted, Sunshine District, much like several of the others, very strong. And I think an issue we have with this particular item is, and someone else referenced it, is you're losing that pipeline, that chapter to district to national. And if that is not strong, is the result going to be a leadership vacuum of sorts? We're a member-driven and member-focused organization. Local, we know, is where the rubber meets the road. And it just, I understand that certainly when they're elected to the board, they represent the entire, you know, board, but it seems like you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. If there are one or two districts that hear every other year or so, and we don't know what that data is, that have an issue finding a representative, then let's deal with that, which is the real problem. We've got other districts that have great representation every single year and have multiple potential nominees.
Sure.
So
the scenario you described, and I'm sorry, I interrupted you again. Go ahead and finish.
No, I just, again, it just, and again, my frame of reference is it's a strong district, strong chapter. Mm-hmm. So the potential to lose that pipeline, to feel like, what's the value of districts then? What's the value of the district if we don't even have that?
Well, I just can't wait to talk, can I? I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. I know, Dave. You've heard it from us many times.
Bonnie, there's no question that you've had a strong sovereign nation of Florida, and it will always be that way, I'm sure. But I think you're implying that communication loop is a one-way trip, and that only can be accomplished if you've got somebody from that district sitting, quote unquote, on the board, you know. Appropriately, it ought to be two-way. It ought to be that you guys have made it, make a commitment that it doesn't matter who's up there, that you're going to have a direct link if you have to go to each individual board member. And again, you guys have done that, and a lot of other districts have too. But I think just by simply removing that absolute requirement that the nominating committee and the assembly has to follow now will automatically mean that communication loop is closed. Because, I think that for a strong district, they're going to make sure that there's a way that their voice is heard.
Fair enough.
And I think, too, by putting strong leaders on, that's what strong leaders do, is they communicate and build relationships and commit to serving others. And I think what we're saying is that that's exactly what we want. We want this nominating committee to pick the best leaders. And just because you're from a geographic area, does that mean you're naturally going to be a good leader and you're going to serve that district well? Or do we want just good leaders who will naturally do that?
I hear you. I just feel like there's the really strong districts, which really are, I think, the bulk of the 10. I know there are a couple that, you know, have some, you know, difficulties or challenges. It could come across as punishment to us just because one or two others maybe one year didn't have a candidate.
I think every
district absolutely could have folks that are capable and would be fantastic leaders at the national level.
And in theory, the Florida could have five members on the board, in theory.
Absolutely.
So it could go the other way, too. I don't know how well they are voting with all the Chads and all that kind of stuff. That,
how long are you going to play that joke, Mike? Seriously? I mean, it's 2009, bro.
We're going to electronic balloting anyway, Mike. It looks fine.
Well, and I would
I hear you
nobody,
guys.
I would hope that nobody looks at this as punishment. I mean, I heard what you said, Bonnie, and I think I know how you meant that. But it's clearly this was meant to be the exact opposite of being punitive. This was meaning, I mean, this was an attempt to remove barriers that are preventing some people from becoming leaders. This plus the APR. This was the very strong opinion of the task force, very strong opinion of the board, that these are artificial barriers that, if removed, does not mean that we're all going to hell in a handbasket, but it does mean that there will be more opportunities for new leaders to emerge, more leaders to emerge, and ultimately, that's the governance issue that we're trying to present, is a more open society. And so it is not at all meant to be punitive. I understand how you meant that, but...
Any other questions related to this particular topic? And again, we can continue this discussion online. Obviously, we have the assembly itself to continue the discussion, and we have several other calls, while certainly on different topics. At the end of those calls, if we have time, we can address these topics. So,
this is a preview, Mike, and you may have, I think you gave these dates at the beginning, but the next call is on October 1st. We have the very non-controversial issues of popular vote versus delegate vote, and then the role of the assembly. So you can count on about a 10-minute call that day, I'm sure. but I would also say, and first of all, it sounds like many of you have had discussions with your chapter, section, and districts, and I really, really, the more y'all have those discussions, you know, at the local level and the chapter level, et cetera, that's going to make these discussions we have on the phone leading up to San Diego that much better. So if you haven't had a chance to kind of look, kind of a deep dive look at what we're proposing with the popular vote, the rationale for it, and the role of the assembly, if you get a chance, bone up on that, and then we'll go through the same kind of process in a couple of weeks with that.
I've got one other quick question. Has the red line version been put up since our last call?
Yes.
Okay. And where do I
find
that? Again,
shout us. And then click on bylaws, and you'll see that there's a link to the third paragraph. You'll see a redlined version underlined, and just click on that, and you go to the red line.
Thank you.
It's dangerous. Be careful.
I know.
Yes, it's
say it again. Where is it located?
If you go to About Us, then click on bylaws, and it's described in the text, and you can just click on it. Third paragraph.
Okay.
Any other questions people have about I want to be mindful of time. Well, you know, thank you very much. I know people have taken a lot of time away from their work and their families for PRSA and for the PR community. So I wanted to thank you all for the work that you do, and thank you for your time today. And again, governance@prsa.org. If you have any questions, that's the best resource, governance@prsa.org. And we look forward to talking to everybody on our next call.
And kiss a staff member of you when you see them.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye-bye.